Get ready to rock radio, music you want to hear.
Well, let's move right up to date, really, with the Cherry Red reissue campaign. We've already had this sumptuous anthology towards the end of 2014. But we should mention also, back in the late 1990s, into the millennium, really, you had a great champion in Rob Ayling of the old Blueprint and Voiceprint label. And there was a series of remasters of the original studio albums from round about 2008 onwards. Now, this latest reissue campaign, I don't know the detail, Ant, but will this be a comprehensive reissue campaign, or will they just, to coin a phrase, cherry pick?
Very good, Palmer. I hadn't thought of that one. That's very good. I'll try and think of one to come back with you on that one in a sec. At the moment, I'm hoping that they're going to release them all. I suppose it's possible that one or two of the more arcane and bizarre ones, they may not. But certainly we have a potential release plan which involves the first tranche of the Private Parts and Pieces, Wise After the Event, Size, 1984, Invisible Men. So we're going to be moving throughout this year to get a good chunk of it out.
And do you think these reissues will differ substantially from what we've heard before? Because I should say that the previous reissues did have bonus tracks, so I would assume that there's no shortage of extra material in your computer somewhere.
David, it's a terribly difficult one, this, isn't it? I've always felt very guilty about this. Expecting people to buy the same thing again just because of a few extra tracks is a bit like expecting somebody to sort of to buy the same painting again because a bloke's drawn in another hay cart in the bottom corner. To take the original one back and buy the new one with extra hay cart. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? But who am I to stand up to the record companies and say, now look here, I'm not going to do it. They just won't put it out. So what do you do, really? I mean, you try and remaster it, you try and make the artwork better. One of their aims, of course, to be fair, is they're trying to reach new people. And Rob Ayling did a great job. I think that he didn't have the muscle he would have liked. It was a very difficult time. He did a great job for a lot of people. But I think later on, things got more tricky. And I think Cherry Red's aim has been to because they have obviously large resources, is to try and spread the net a bit wider. And they're hoping to pick up people who either have never heard the stuff before or who've been lost along the way. So for those people, extra bonus tracks is neither here nor there. But it is a very moot point when you're expecting people that have bought Private Parts and Pieces, one or two in a couple of guys, is to go to trudge out again and buy this thing just because it's got a couple of slightly rusty extra tracks which have been prized out of the attic. I'm not selling it very well, but I mean, I do see both sides of this one. So what we will do is we will be hoping to, as I said, mainly reach a lot of people that we haven't before, but we'll do our level best to make sure that we do give as substantial a kind of extra stuff to people who do want to, who've already got it.
I think that's a very honest account. I was thinking also, you can always offer the different bonus material as a download. I mean, I think, frankly, that's right, but your fans, I think, anyway, will buy anything. I mean, you just do this with any artist, don't you? If you like what they put out, for completism, if nothing else, you buy the latest version. It's just human nature, I think, isn't it, really?
Well, they do, but I do feel a bit bad unless one does really offer something. So we'll do our level best to make it worthwhile.
And we should say that The Geese and the Ghost is now coming out again as a special edition via Cherry Red Records. And I know you mentioned before the interview, and it's coming out in a 5.1 mix as well.
Yes, I mean, I think a lot of people, including myself, are kind of a bit blasé about this and think it's a sort of, icing on the cake, sort of, the nicety. But actually, having gone down to Simon Hayworth's wonderful mastering studio, Simon, who all those years ago engineered The Geese and the Ghost, I was completely bowled over when they sat me in this position and played me, first of all, the Jerry Goldsmith score, and then they played me a James Taylor album, and it literally was like being in the middle of an orchestra, and then in the middle of a band. And when they went back to stereo, it sounded terribly sort of impoverished, and it was one of those sort of Road to Damascus things. I'm not saying I've been prissy ever since then and will only listen to music like that, but I hadn't realized just what level of enhancement listening to that can give, if you're prepared to spend the time. As we were saying earlier, people will spend the time watching a film at home on DVD for an hour and a half. So, you know, if you love an album, why should you not do the same thing? You have the only restriction, again, is you have to sit in one position, but you generally do that when you're watching a film as well. So I'm a late convert, yes, and I feel a bit embarrassed by how I was a bit blasé about it before, because it's mind-boggling, really, having the music all around you. You just sort of feel enveloped by it.
Yeah, it may give perhaps a whole new lease of life to the way we listen to music, certainly certain albums, because... you know, it's often the way you chat to artists and, you know, to fellow fans, really. And back in the day, I'm talking really the 70s,
yeah.
You know, you used to sort of buy an album, didn't you? And you'd rush back and you'd play it with your mates. You know, it would be a social activity, you know, the latest Pink Floyd or the latest
sure.
Genesis or something. And I think one of the other aspects of this, to get the full benefit of the whole thing, you need a really good sound system. So I assume in the future we'll be going round with our copies of The Geese and the Ghost to the mate who's got the big sound system, you know.
Well, I think this is the trouble. I totally agree with what you were saying earlier, and I think we didn't mention was, of course, the artwork. The artwork was also so important. And,
yes.
And people would cherish the cover, and the artwork now, sadly, given downloads and even the diminution of size with CD, has become marginalised. And when you think of some of Peter Cross's wonderful designs on The Geese of the Ghost, Private Parts and Pieces 1, etc., etc., it is actually terribly sad, because, as you say, it wasn't just a sonic experience, it was a sort of all senses experience, really. This is a worrying one about the cost. Nevertheless, it must be pointed out, though, it isn't necessarily a rich man's exclusively a pastime, because you can get effectively the nuts and bolts of a surround system for £200. It's a question of the quality, and people will spend absolutely ridiculous sums of money. I mean, I've spent more than that, but I haven't spent a lot of money, and I've got by comparison to that, and I've got a perfectly decent system. The speakers, I think, are the thing that really matter. But yes, the idea that you've got to, I mean, you know, what does a really decent TV cost you nowadays, for instance? No, I don't think it's not, one is not saying in order to have a surround system you've got to be, you know, filthy rich and spend thousands. You don't have to.
No, I agree. But it could be something that catches on, you know, more widely in the future. But I think it takes artists like yourself, and I know Steve Hackett's latest album is in 5.1, you know, with a bit of a budget, anything's possible. And even talking actually to Alan Parsons, you know, he's a great advocate of 5.1, but as he says, it's the oftentimes it's just bands can't afford it, you know. They can't afford to actually make that album, you know, because of the costs.
Well, that's right. I mean, I've been incredibly lucky, to be honest. The truth of it is that that's another very good point you make, is that most artists, it's simply not on the menu. It was never on the menu for me before Cherry Red and Esoteric. And there is by no means a question that we're going to be able to do all my albums in 5.1, because there simply isn't the budget for it. I mean, the budget was there for it up to a point because of the more commercial nature of The Geese and the Ghost, considering the presence of Phil Collins and Mike Rutherford on it. But I don't think I'm not fooled for one moment that this is going to be able to do this on lots of other albums, because it simply won't be cost effective for them. The ones that I think I would probably most like to do, put it like this, it's not impossible that they might be done, that are Slow Dance and Tarka. I think basically because they're sort of big canvas